So I'm going to talk to you
about... We should wait a little bit longer, don't you think?
I think people have just not been reminded.
Yeah, let's remind them.
Yes.
Otherwise it's a bit of a...
Yes.
If we just wait 2 minutes till...
Okay.
I'm going to go over anyway. I'll send people over. Okay.
Hey. We now begin with a series of bio talks, just because I have a specific affinity for bio. The final whistle is...
Go ahead, make my day.
So you get that at 10 minutes. Peace sign at 8 minutes.
Got it. Start off?
Go ahead.
Okay, right. So I've got 3 experiments to get through in 10 minutes, so we're going to go fast. We usually think of individual differences, or many people do anyway, as a discipline of behavioral science, but I'm going to talk to you about physiological individual differences, physiological predictors thereof, in a context of autistic traits of social responsiveness or social non-responsiveness. In a number of subdisciplines, it's become true that the traits once assumed to be categorical differences defining disease states are now being recognized increasingly as dimensional variables. So in the example of my own field of autism research, probably the best known dimensional instrument is something called the social responsiveness scale from John Constantino's group. And he's shown a very smooth unimodal distribution of autistic traits throughout the general population. It's only as you move out into the tail of the distribution that you begin picking up the autism spectrum diagnoses. And I had to put this in because it's from Alex Sumich. That kind of dimensionality in other neuropsychiatric conditions also encompasses neurophysiology. So this is actually a slide from Alex's work from 2008 looking at schizotypal traits versus amplitude of a evoked potential component called the P300. That's something we're going to return to later when I talk about some of my own work. So these individual differences emerge developmentally, and in an interactive specialization paradigm popularized by Annette Carmeloff-Smith and Mark Johnson, the individual variations in cognitive and behavioral traits in one domain specialize in interaction with other traits and other domains. So extreme degrees of such emergent traits may disrupt the development of other emergent traits in the context of developmental disorders. And that's certainly true in issues of cognitive control that might promote repetitive behaviors, say, in autism, and also disrupt social communication in autism. More interesting in the current context is typical degrees of such variations. So things that are not clinically abnormal at all. We find that in the typical domain, individual differences in non-social cognitive traits may affect the emergence of individual differences in social cognition. So I'm going to tell you about 3 experiments. Experiment 1 is actually in the past. Experiment 1 is published, but it's good background. Experiments 2 and 3 are new stuff. So here's experiment 1, individual differences in distractor perception. This is a task of perceptual decision. And all you got to do is decide for each screen whether the stimulus on the left is orange and the stimulus on the left is pointed upwards and the stimulus on the right is orange. You have to make that conjunction and you have to do it in a speeded way with a very, very brief presentation that does not allow a saccade. That might seem pretty simple, but if you include distractors, it gets hard. We can, of course, manipulate the number of distractors and make it easy again. So, hard bit, easy bit. And all we care about are those 2 central stimuli in each hemifield. So, when people are doing this task, we stuck them in a scanner and had them do this task. This is an fMRI, a group of fMRI time courses extracted from middle frontal gyrus. We see this effect in a number of areas of frontal cortex, but MFG shows us it best. I have different groups here of people with autism in blue. The clinically unaffected siblings of people with autism in pink, and unrelated typical controls in red. And you can see that there are some latency differences in the peak activation that they display. What this is a subtraction of the easy congruent condition, congruent distractor condition, from the hard incongruent distractor condition. So we're looking at what does frontal cortex have to do extra during that condition of processing very difficult perceptual decisions. So we find that the more autistic traits you have, the longer it takes for you to sort of switch on frontal cortex, the more stuck you become in the current processing mode of frontal cortex. And we find that that latency of peak activation actually correlates with the level of autistic traits, not just in the autism sample, but also in the typical sample, also in the sibling sample, and also slightly in the unrelated normal controls. That result is already published, so that's old news, but it provides context for the next ones. So experiment two, individual differences in behavioral inhibition. This is about as simple behavioral inhibition task as you can get. It's a go, no-go task. What we've done is coded this task up inside a video game. So you're playing this video game, a wormhole opens in front of you, and you need to wait for a spaceship to emerge from it. That spaceship is either going to be a friend whom you should not shoot, or an enemy whom you should shoot before he shoots you. Pretty simple task, standard go, no, go. What we correlated that task against was the reading the mind in the eyes test, a test of social cognition. So obviously, video game, shooter, go, no, go, pretty much non-social. Reading the mind in the eyes, a task of extracting social information from faces. And I was, as I was just discussing with someone during the lunch hour, of course, there is a big verbal confound to this. It's not the best task, but it's a widely used task of social perception. So we took evoke potentials during the go, no-go task. And this is evoke responses to the no-go stimulus. All right, so friendly ship emerges, you have to withhold your finger from the button. And we looked at the amplitude of the P3 response. Oh, what did I just do?
Probably just press the button at the bottom.
Yeah?
Press it again.
Ooh, thank you. How do I go back? Ah. I've gone through a lot.
The right button goes forward, the left button moves it.
Yeah, you that. I'm not going to touch that thing again. Okay. So we measured the peak amplitude of the P3 right here, the highest peak you can see. So we took that peak amplitude and we plotted it for each individual against the score on the reading the mind and the eyes test. So the vertical axis here is the amplitude of the P3 during this non-social task. Visual go-no-go stimulus. The horizontal axis is a score on reading the mind and the eyes. And they are nicely correlated, contributing to that correlation is not only the people on the autism spectrum themselves in red, but also the unrelated typical controls in blue, the siblings of people with autism who do not themselves qualify for any clinical diagnosis. So somehow the social, perceptual, and or verbal skills necessary to accomplish this task are correlating with P3 amplitude in a purely non-social attentional paradigm. Okay, I'd like to point out Alex's old result again measuring same thing, P3, and correlating it with schizotypal traits. We actually got the opposite with autistic traits. The axes are a little different. Than he got with schizotypal traits. So I can talk more about that later, but I realize I have less than 2 minutes left. So experiment number three, individual differences in distractor suppression. This is a visual vigilance task. You've just got to wait for a stimulus to pop up, and then you've got to go and grab it by pressing a key as rapidly as possible. This is again coded up inside a video game. So this is the game screen during which it's being introduced. And when we record EEG during this paradigm, we find that as a function of autistic traits, there is an increase in the EEG slow wave response to the distractor stimuli. So that's most evident if you look in the autism spectrum people themselves and also in their unaffected siblings. You see over here on the right side of the curve, this red line is the response to distractor stimuli. The dotted line is a response to actually behaviorally relevant target stimuli. And both in the case of the autism spectrum and in the sibling population, they seem just unable to let go of that behaviorally irrelevant distractor stimulus, whereas the typically developing population doesn't have that problem. The degree of this response, the difference in slow wave response between distractors and targets, does correlate with score, again, on the autism spectrum quotient. So in summary, neural processes associated with domain-general non-social cognitive control seem to contribute to individual variation in social cognition, not only within the autism spectrum, but also beyond the autism spectrum. And we find that good ways of eliciting those neural variations are by using stimuli that are irrelevant to the currently active tasks. So no-go cues, distractor stimuli, things that shouldn't result in a lot of processing actually do result in a lot of processing in people with high autistic traits. This isn't just basic science. There is an impact here. What it means, I suggest, is that there is a kind of backdoor route, potentially, to training in social communicative skills. If we can train these basic domain-general cognitive skills, especially at early ages, we might achieve better results in social communication. I know I'm out of time, so thank you for listening.
Couple of quick questions for Matthew. Yes.
I mean, another alternative could be that as a third variable or
absolutely
design process that influences the two. So have you got any ideas about doing something developmentally longitudinally? You see, there is a, you know, I mean, it'd be difficult to do a task. I know that would be equivalent. But
yeah. I mean, I don't do babies, except for my own baby, who is fascinating, by the way, and gives me a lot more insight into this. But it is something that would be of interest to me. I'm not sure I'm the best person to do it. With that said, there is some work. We have some data. When I was at Cornell, I took data from my colleague Steve Robertson, who does study babies. And he's been there so long that some of his babies were now like 10 years old. And we did take some of the video game data from them, which remained to be analyzed. So we have a potentially interesting study there sitting on disk.
Any other questions?
Yeah, well, it's kind of more like a query, isn't it? So you're saying the people that have high autism, their siblings also have this same stimuli?
So we quantified autistic traits, and we did that. I'm coming from the study of autism per se, not just differences in autistic traits. So I looked at autism per se, I looked at the siblings of people with autism, and then I looked at unrelated people. But we quantified levels of autistic traits in all of them, and across all of those three populations, the level of autistic traits correlates with these physiological descriptors that I've outlined.
Perfect. Thanks very much. Okay, next up.